It does seem quite certain, Alec, as we look back on the history of the last 3 years, that while the United States and Russia have seemed to come to the brink of a showdown on several occasions, most notably in Cuba last October, the President and Premier Khrushchev did seem to understand each other fairly well and at times actually seemed to read each other's minds.
Well, I think they both understood the realities of this 20th century, this nuclear age. I think since they were the men in charge of the two greatest nuclear establishments in the world, obviously they knew what the consequences were of letting those things come out from under control. I think they were aware of the awful terror, really, which was theirs to command, and this was something that gave them a bond that no other statesmen in the world really have had, ever.
There was a lot more that connected them, I imagine, as you say, Alex, than simply that hot line between Washington and Moscow, which I'm sure both of them hoped they would never have to use.
Yes.
Well, Alex, it certainly has been a horrible moment here.
This country really, tonight, has a pall over it. I mean, people just cannot believe that such a thing could have happened. Really, it's just something that staggered the entire nation.
As we were rushing to the CBS News studios this afternoon, Alec, we could see people stopping on the street and talking to each other in obvious disbelief, and taxi drivers were leaning out the windows of their cars, telling each other about it. Nobody seemed to be able to believe that it could actually have happened.
That's true. That's the feeling that we got here. It didn't, of course. This happened at around 7 o'clock London time. As I said, this was just at the beginning of the dinner hour. People were listening to their radio sets, and the first flash came from the BBC just 1 minute before 7 o'clock, and people just turned from their radios and looked at each other in blank amazement. It was just something that they couldn't believe.
I don't recall such a sense of stupefaction since the death of President Roosevelt in April 1945. Of course, he'd been the president for over 12 years, and a lot of people had grown up with him, so that he was the only president a lot of people ever really had known. So that perhaps the sense of amazement and shock and stupefaction was greater when Roosevelt died of his cerebral hemorrhage. But I'm quite sure that most Americans will feel very much the same way right now about the death of President Kennedy.
Well, I think most Britons will feel the same way.
We have a note here that the Pope received the news with dismay, according to sources at the Vatican, and the Pope has gone to his private chapel to say prayers for the president. He's expected to send him messages of condolences.
Well, Dallas, just for your interest, the president of the Liberal Party here, Lord Ockmore, has issued a statement saying, "I would like to express our deep distress and shock at the news of President Kennedy's death. This is indeed a grievous blow to the cause of the free world and to the Atlantic partnership in which he was such a believer." And I think those sentiments stand for almost every man, woman, and child in this country.
Well, Alec, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be back to you later, and I'm sure that all people throughout the world will feel as the people of Britain do and as the people of the United States feel about the the assassination of the president. Thank you very much, Alex.
Goodbye, Dallas.
And Dallas, if I can come in here, there's similar sentiments are being expressed by other European leaders, as might normally be expected. French Prime Minister Pompidou, for example, said simply, "It is atrocious, it is frightful, I am overwhelmed." And in Madrid, a Foreign Office spokesman said, "It is horrible, absolutely horrible, a most barbarous thing. Everyone in Spain is horrified." Italy's premier-designate, Aldo Moro, said, "Mr. Kennedy's stature as a politician in his great country and on the international scene was growing in these years of a courageous policy of renewal." And he added, "The reason for which he was struck in a mad way raises President Kennedy even more on the moral plane as a great defender of men's dignity and equality." These, of course, are just a few samples of the opinions and sentiments which have been pouring in here from all over the world as a result of this tragedy in Dallas.
Alan, just a few minutes ago, George Reedy, a special assistant to Lyndon Johnson, went to the White House. His mission was not known, but presumably it was in connection with Lyndon Johnson's assumption of the presidency. Senator Hubert Humphrey, the Democratic whip, Senator Humphrey of Minnesota, who tried hard to win the Democratic presidential nomination and campaigned vigorously against Mr. Kennedy in 1960, Senator Humphrey walked into the executive offices a few minutes earlier. He was described as silent and ashen-faced. Dozens of newsmen are milling around in the White House press rooms. Lee White, a presidential assistant on housing matters, pinch hit as the press secretary. White said, "I'm sorry that we can't give you much information. The reason is that we just don't have it." The reason, of course, that Mr. White is pinch hitting is that Pierre Salinger, as we told you a while ago, was on his way to Japan from Honolulu when the assassination occurred, along with several members of the president's cabinet. The plane has turned around and is coming back, and presumably it will make all speed for Washington. We're going to pause again now briefly in order for our stations to identify themselves. We'll pause now for 5 seconds. This is the CBS Radio Network.
From the studios in Minneapolis and St. Paul at 830 WCCO. CCO temperature 36 degrees.
Here again are our CBS News headquarters in New York. And the big question now, there are many questions. First of all, who shot the president? What is his name? What was his motive? Second, when will Lyndon Johnson take the oath of office? Because Lyndon Johnson is now the 36th president of the United States. For reaction at the Department of Justice, where the president's brother is the attorney general, we're going to switch now to CBS News correspondent Charles Von Fremd at the Department of Justice in Washington.
Within minutes after the dulling news swept through Washington that the president had been shot, hordes of reporters converged on the Justice Department, looking for the president's younger brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy. The attorney general was not here. He was at his nearby Virginia home. Several dozen newsmen and photographers paced this way and that outside the attorney general's huge doorway, hoping for some message of substance from News Secretary Ed Guthman. There was no word. Up and down the long Justice Department corridors were signs of grief, which grew more emotional as the minutes passed and the blaring news from radios and television sets grew more ominous. When it was confirmed President Kennedy was dead, secretaries rushed from their offices, hiding their faces, convulsed in sobs. Many of them had been working for the president and his family before his nomination and election. When the word went out that the attorney general was en route to the airport, the crowds here silently drifted away. One Negro secretary still cried softly. Above her was a big, smiling picture of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. This is Charles Von Fremd at the Justice Department.
Back at our CBS News headquarters in New York, there are more details coming in from the scene of the tragedy in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Police in Fort Worth now say they have arrested a suspect in addition to the man who was picked up in Dallas. The man picked up in Dallas has been described as a 25-year-old. No further identification beyond that. So now the Fort Worth police say they have a suspect in addition to this man. Because Mr. Lyndon Johnson is the new president of the United States, the Secret Service has immediately taken control of his movements, and there are indications that he may even now be on his way back to Washington. We are beginning to get more reaction from overseas, and particularly from the Soviet Union. Our correspondent in Moscow has just reported in, so let's hear the report of correspondent Stuart Novins.
The first news of President Kennedy's death by assassination came into this country by way of Voice of America's English news broadcast at shortly after 10 o'clock tonight. The city was dark. Snow had just begun to fall. The streets were relatively empty of people. At 10:30 p.m., Radio Moscow interrupted its program to publish the bulletin of the assassination attack. The bulletin said that President Kennedy had been shot, apparently by right-wing extremists, that his condition was serious. At 10:45, Moscow Television made the same announcement and then added a further bulletin that the president was in critical condition. At 10:50, the English language version of TASS, the overseas news agency, carried this report. It said, "It has just been officially announced that United States President John F. Kennedy has died in hospital after an attempt was made on his life by persons believed to be from among the extreme right-wing elements." At 10:57, Radio Moscow again interrupted its regular service to announce that the president had been murdered. The announcement was brief, respectful, and it was followed immediately by the playing of slow, sad music. United States Ambassador Kohler told me when I was able to reach him at the residence, Spasso House, that he felt devastated. He almost mumbled as he talked to me in what obviously was great grief. He said that he and Mrs. Kohler had been at home alone, not a social evening, when the news came in. He said, "I feel terrible. I can't even say what I feel. I'm devastated." At Moscow University, where several American students are living and studying, they too heard the first reports over Voice of America. Since the signing of the nuclear test ban, Voice of America in English has not been jammed here. The students at first refused to believe the report. Then, when doubting was no longer a refuge, there was silent shock and half-whispered reactions. What will happen now? It's terrible. One man just stood and wept. Russian students, friends of the Americans, came in quietly and shook hands and expressed sorrow. One Russian said, "Kennedy was a liberal. What will happen in the world now?" Friends of this reporter, among some Russians here, telephoned immediately when they heard the news. Since the signing of the nuclear test ban, Voice of America in English has not been jammed here. The students at first refused to believe the report. Then, when doubting was no longer a refuge, there was silent shock and half-whispered reactions. What will happen now? It's terrible. One man just stood there and wept. Russian students, friends of the Americans, came in quietly and shook hands and expressed sorrow. One Russian said, "Kennedy was a liberal. What will happen to the world now?" Friends of this reporter, among some Russians here, telephoned immediately when they heard the news. They offered their sympathy and condolence. One thought almost as if they too could feel what an American must feel when his president has been assassinated. This is Stuart Novins in Moscow.
We should explain for our listeners that there was a slight technical flaw in that report from correspondent Novins. It had been recorded by tape just a few moments before we switched to him. There was an interruption, as you probably heard, by the Moscow telephone operator. It was not a broadcast line, but a telephone line, which Novins used to make his report in. And in the recording of his piece, there was an unnecessary duplication, which we did not have time to eliminate before we put it on the air. The shock of the death of President Kennedy has spread to all persons. Henry Cabot Lodge, our ambassador to South Vietnam, who was on his way to confer with President Kennedy, grappled for words in stunned shock at the news of the assassination. Lodge is in San Francisco. He said, "I was very fond of him and knew him intimately. We served in Congress together and knew each other before that in Massachusetts. Lately," he said, "we have been particularly close because he followed, not followed, but guided America's foreign policy. He took a keen personal interest in it and gave it a great deal of personal time." Lodge had paused in San Francisco on his way from a high-level policy conference on South Vietnam in Honolulu. He had planned to meet with Mr. Kennedy Sunday morning, but he says now that he will leave tomorrow morning for Washington and report to Avril Harriman, the Assistant Secretary of State. We should remind our listeners and our stations along the network that we will continue with the present programming on the CBS Radio Network, and all regularly scheduled programs and commercial announcements will be discontinued until further notice.
Alan, we now have the name of that suspect who has been picked up by Dallas, Texas police in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman. This story says the Dallas Police Department has arrested a 24-year-old man identified as Lee H. Oswald in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated. Oswald is also being interrogated to see if he had any connection with the slaying of the president. Oswald was pulled screaming and yelling, according to this story, from the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas. This story does not say that Oswald is the man wanted in connection with the slaying of the president. It says that he is wanted in connection with the killing of a Dallas policeman. This policeman may be the Secret Service agent who was referred to earlier as being the man shot and killed at the same time that the president was assassinated.
Some more human interest reaction has come in to the death of the president. A taxi driver in New York City, 60-year-old Joseph Kaufman, when he heard the news, put his hand to his head and moaned simply, "Those dirty bums." And then he told his passenger, "As soon as I drop you off, I'm going home. I can't work anymore." Alabama's Governor George Wallace said that whoever fired the shots must be filled with universal malice toward all. It is hard to believe that anyone would shoot at the President of the United States. A further word from Dallas is that Vice President Johnson, now President Johnson, is returning immediately to Washington and will be in Washington by evening, where he is expected to be sworn into office. As my colleague Dallas Townsend has pointed out, that even before he is actually sworn in, he is the President of the United States. A tremendous traffic jam developed around Parkland Hospital in Dallas. White House officials stood by sorrowfully, looking stunned in corridors in a waiting room. For an agonizing minute after minute, there were conflicting rumors as to whether the president was still alive. And then came the official announcement that John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 35th President of the United States, was dead.
Alan, something more on that arrest that's been made in Dallas, Texas. The man named Lee H. Oswald, that's the identification given him by the Dallas Police Department, brandished a pistol which officers took away from him after a scuffle. Police officer M.N. McDonald, who was cut across the face in the scuffle, quotes Oswald as saying, after he was subdued, "Well, it's all over now." A large crowd gathered around the theater, the Texas Theater, in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas, and witnessed the arrest. Police had to hold the crowds back because many apparently connected the arrested man with the assassination of the president. And as we said a moment ago, there is no such connection at the moment, as far as is known publicly. The officer who was killed, J.D. Tippett, was killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. Tippett had been slain with a pistol. The president was assassinated with a high-powered rifle with a telescopic sight, and it may well be that two men are involved here, especially since we had a report a few minutes ago that an arrest had been made in Fort Worth.
That quite possibly is true, Dallas, and there will be some confusion for some time until all of this is finally cleared up. We also had a report at one time that one of the Secret Service men had been killed.
Yes,
but I haven't heard or seen anything firm on that.
That's right, and I don't know, Alan, it's impossible to tell from these very disconnected reports coming in whether that Secret Service man is the same as the police officer, the Dallas police officer, who was shot, according to Dallas police, and was killed by Lee Oswald. Now, we're going to get a little background now on the Secret Service, the agency of the government that is charged with the protection of the president. So we're going to switch again to Washington and CBS News correspondent Charles Von Fremd.
Like many a man who has once had a close brush with death, President Kennedy was inclined to laugh at it. His widely publicized adventures as the skipper of PT-109 in the Pacific during World War II had left a lifetime mark on the president. He was inclined to minimize any physical danger from assassins' bullets. This reporter, who covered John Kennedy throughout the year of 1960, through seven primaries, the convention, and the victorious campaign, vividly recalls one night in June of that year, high in the skies over the Great Plains, in the Kennedy family plane, the Caroline. The primaries were over. The senator from Massachusetts had swept the board. He was relaxed and confident as he looked forward to the Los Angeles convention and the campaign ahead. For the first time, he seriously believed he had an excellent chance of not only winning the Democratic nomination, but of moving on to the presidency. He knew that I had covered the White House during 6 years of General Eisenhower's administration, and he was curious on this summer night, high in the skies, over the heartlands of the nation, as to just what the White House would be like. The conversation turned to the Secret Service. I explained that if he became president, he would no longer be able to move about freely as he had as a senator. It was apparent that Senator Kennedy wasn't buying this line of thought, even though the Secret Service has the authority to order the president to follow their instructions if they believed his life might be in potential danger. Mr. Kennedy shook his head in disbelief when told the Secret Service made arrangements for former President Truman's personal necessities when traveling, and thought the agents running alongside President Eisenhower's automobile and motorcades only served to block the public's vision of the chief executive. He observed on that night, I recall the substance, if not the exact quote, so well, that there wasn't any sure-proof way to protect the president from a dedicated, able assassin. In his 3 years in office, President Kennedy did change some traditional Secret Service responsibilities. For one thing, he liked to drive a car himself, frequently took the wheel from the hands of the SS driver. He also liked to change schedules on the spur of the moment, and on occasion was unprotected until agents realized he had left their midst. It is tragically ironic that when the assassin's bullet came, it came at a moment when the president was under full Secret Service protection. But as he had said in the Caroline 3 years ago, If a composed madman with high grades and marksmanship wants to kill the leader of the nation, there is little the Secret Service can do about it. This is Charles Von Fremd at the Justice Department.
We've received word here at our CBS News headquarters in New York that officers at Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland say they understand that President Kennedy's body will be brought back to Washington this afternoon. Senator Ted Kennedy, the youngest of the Kennedy brothers, is said to be flying to Cape Cod to be with the Kennedy family. That is, with the late president's father and mother. There's more reaction now here in the New York area. Let's switch now to our CBS News correspondent, Bernard Eisman, who is reporting from New York's St. Patrick's Cathedral.
The bells tolled on Fifth Avenue, and the traffic noise became almost non-existent. Something unusual for a day at this time in New York. And as the news of the president's death spread through the city, people of all faiths came to the Roman Catholic St. Patrick's Cathedral. They're streaming in now and coming out, tears in their eyes, their cheeks wet from crying. One woman told me, "I'm Jewish, but when I heard I had to go to a Catholic church to pray for President Kennedy." Other people going in and out remarked only on the tragedy. They all seemed to be stunned. Come, and as Fifth Avenue becomes clogged with traffic heading for the cathedral, the bells continue to toll, and they toll the grief that is being felt by most New Yorkers. This is Bernard Eisman at St. Patrick's Cathedral on Fifth Avenue in New York.
We've had yet another report on the possible time of Lyndon Johnson's official swearing-in as the new president. This one is that he is expected to be sworn in as president aboard an airliner before flying immediately back to the nation's capital. A moment ago, we had a report that he would be flying back to Washington to be sworn in there. It is all a matter of speculation at the moment and really academic, because Lyndon Johnson became president of the United States, according to the terms of the Constitution, immediately upon the death of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who died just under 2 hours ago in Dallas from the bullets of an assassin fired into him as he rode through the streets of Dallas in a motorcade heading for the Dallas Trade Mart, where he was to make a speech this afternoon, the second day of a three-day trip swing through Texas, partly political, partly for speaking out on the issues in which he so firmly believed. President Kennedy never made that speech. He was killed by the assassin's bullets. The bullets also wounded Texas Governor Connally, who was riding in the same car with the president at the time. Governor Connally is showing good signs of recovery and is not in critical condition, according to the last reports. So that our latest information is that Lyndon Johnson may be sworn in as president aboard an airliner just before flying back to Washington this afternoon. And now, Dallas, I believe you've gathered some more bits of information over here.
Well, Alan, it's interesting to point out that Lyndon Johnson will be the second president of the United States to have suffered a heart attack, at least as far as known. Mr. Johnson, while he was the majority leader of the Senate, suffered a moderately severe heart attack seizure in the summer of 1955. That was more than 8 years ago, and he spent several weeks in the hospital. It required all the discipline that he could muster to curb his energy and remain absolutely quiet for hours at a time. He stopped smoking cigarettes and reduced his weight from 220 to 190 pounds. Almost inevitably, the rumor cropped up again today, as soon as President Kennedy had been assassinated, that Lyndon Johnson, the new president, had suffered a heart attack. Frank Vallejo, secretary to the Senate Democratic majority in Washington, has issued a statement saying there is no substance to rumors that President Johnson suffered a heart attack. Johnson, who was in the presidential party at Dallas when Mr. Kennedy was assassinated, has been reported fine by his wife. She has denied a report that he also had been shot. The vice president is apparently in good health and is ready to assume the duties, the prerogatives, the responsibilities, and the awful burdens of the presidency. Alan, while we've been talking here, I've been thinking back to some of the memories that I have, and I'm sure that many reporters have many more, some of the memories of President Kennedy. The first time I ever talked to him at any great length was in 1950, when he was the junior senator from Massachusetts. and I had a long talk with him one afternoon in his suite at 122 Bowdoin Street in Boston, right near the Massachusetts State Capitol. That's an apartment which the Kennedy family still retains and which the president always used for his legal voting address. At that time, the president was considered quite likely to announce for the Democratic presidential nomination, but he hadn't actually done it, and a lot of people felt he had very little chance of getting it. But I remember being struck at the time by feeling that he was at least going to put into the attempt everything that he possibly had, and as it turned out, he did get it.
Mm-hmm. We're getting still more reports and more reactions, and we've had another one of our correspondents in the Washington staff check in with us, so let's hear now from Paul Niven at Robert Kennedy's home in Washington.
At the time of the president's assassination, Attorney General Robert Kennedy was lunching at his home here with Robert Morgenthau, last year's unsuccessful Democratic gubernatorial candidate in New York State. The Attorney General learned of his brother's assassination in a phone call from FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover. Within a few moments, a Roman Catholic priest appeared here at the house to give the family condolences. Another visitor was Central Intelligence Agency Director John McCall. He and Robert Kennedy walked for some minutes in the garden. Mrs. Ethel Kennedy, the Attorney General's wife, left the house briefly to gather some of her children from their private schools. When the party returned, the Attorney General welcomed them at the door and gathered one of his young daughters into his arms. This is Paul Niven at McLean, Virginia.
A crowd of stunned citizens in Dallas thronged around the hospital where President Kennedy died. The ambulance which took his body from the hospital was forced almost to a halt at one point because of the silent and waiting people. Adding poignancy to the tragedy was the fact that both Kennedy children will have birthdays within the next week. Caroline will be 6 on November 7th, and John Jr. will be 3 on November 25th. Vice President Lyndon Johnson left Parkland Hospital this afternoon, and now we've had a later bulletin than that. Mr. Johnson has been sworn in as President of the United States. He was sworn in as of about 2:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be about an hour and 20 minutes ago.
Alan, that must have been on board that airliner at Dallas, because he hasn't had time to get to Washington yet.
That's right. I think that probably that took place according to one report we've had here, it took place just before he took off. And now we are told that the oath of office was administered by U.S. District Judge Sarah T. Hughes. So Lyndon Johnson is now the 36th President of the United States, succeeding to the presidency upon the death of John Kennedy, killed by an assassin's bullet in Dallas this afternoon.
Former President Eisenhower has issued a statement on the assassination of President Kennedy. The statement was issued from his suite at the Waldorf in New York. General Eisenhower says, "I share the sense of shock and dismay that all Americans feel at the despicable act that resulted in the death of our nation's president. Mrs. Eisenhower and I also join with all other citizens in expressing our personal grief and our prayerful concern to Mrs. Kennedy and all other members of the family." General Eisenhower has been spending a day or so in New York. He's come up from Gettysburg, and the statement was issued by his longtime aide, Brigadier General Robert Schultz. And now we're going to switch again to London and CBS News correspondent Alexander Kendrick, who has further reaction on the assassination of President Kennedy. Alex?
Yes, Dallas. First of all, the Queen, who is staying in the country with friends privately this weekend, was told of President Kennedy's death, and she is sending a personal message of sympathy. This is what Buckingham Palace said tonight. Now, the Prime Minister, as I reported before, is on his way back to No. 10 Downing Street from the country. Meanwhile, No. 10 has issued this statement. The Prime Minister has learned with the most profound shock and horror of the death by assassination of the President of the United States. A more formal and fuller statement will be issued by the Prime Minister later this evening. The leader of the opposition, of the Labour opposition, Harold Wilson, was making a speech at a meeting up in North Wales this evening when the news came of the President's death. And he also issued a statement, which I have right here. I am sure, said Mr. Wilson, that I'm speaking for everyone here, for the whole Labour Party throughout the country, indeed for everyone in this country, when I express our deep horror at this evil act. I pay tribute to one who has been a good friend of this country, a great world statesman, and a great fighter for peace. His great struggle for racial equality in the United States is something that will, in memory, long outlive his life. A former Prime Minister, the former Sir Anthony Eden, now the Earl of Avon, issued this statement. The news is appalling. This is tragic news for the United States and for the free world. The sympathy of us all will go out to Mrs. Kennedy and the rest of the family. The President's exceptional qualities of firm but patient diplomacy have been recognized by us all as a service to peace. Young in experience but wise in heart, the whole free world will be mourning him. Also, Westminster Cathedral, which is the heart of the Catholic population of Britain, announced tonight that the De Profundis was said tonight in the cathedral for the repose of the soul of President Kennedy, and the 12:30 Mass tomorrow will be a requiem for the President. Subsequently, there will be a solemn pontifical requiem Mass, which will be announced as soon as the funeral arrangements have been made. Incidentally, Dallas, it's of some comment that the American Embassy here in London has suddenly become a focal point for scores of people who have just congregated outside the embassy hoping for news about the President. And the switchboard at the embassy has been flooded with hundreds of calls, many, of course, from Americans living in England, and among these were a great many servicemen who are on duty in various places throughout England. And it's perhaps an ironic note that in the entrance hall of the American Embassy here, there is a small statue of President Lincoln, which reminded people that President Kennedy was not the first president to meet his death in this fashion.
Alex, people have been gathering in the United States, too, in large cities and also in small, I'm quite sure. As we passed the Associated Press building a while ago, we saw people gathered outside the windows where they have a high-speed ticker that it was bringing the latest. And, of course, as you walk along the streets, you see people with radios held up to their ears, portable radios, listening to the latest details on the assassination of the president. All the car radios are on. And I would say that it's undoubted that a sense of shock, dismay, and incredulity, I imagine, is sweeping across the United States. It's interesting that both Harold Wilson, the leader of the opposition, and former Prime Minister Avon, whose statements you referred to a moment ago, emphasized Mr. Kennedy's services to the cause of world peace. I should imagine that when the history books are written about the Kennedy administration, this probably will go down as his principal service, his untiring efforts to reach an accommodation, if not an agreement, with the heads of the communist world so that the world could be spared the devastation of a nuclear war.
Yes, Dallas, that's the reaction that the British have, too. They think of him, even though he was a young man, comparatively speaking, they think of him as the leader of the West, who, although armed with strength which was unheard of before this century, nevertheless used that strength in order to seek accommodation.
What would you say, Alex, about the feeling of the average individual Briton? Did they have a strong personal affection for the president? Was he a remote figure, or was he somebody whom they understood and liked as a personality?
He was by no means a remote figure. I think he was as well known here as the leaders of the British government. As a matter of fact, he was probably more popular and better known to the average Briton than, let us say, half the members of the cabinet who go about their routine tasks in a very routine way. But the president had a flair about him, and I must say the British correspondents in America were very good about reporting on every phase of the Kennedy family and the Kennedy career, so that the impact of Kennedy in this country was an immediate one. I mean, people heard his voice every time he made a speech. The BBC was always on the ball, bringing his press conferences over by radio. He appeared on television news programs almost every evening, and there was this feeling that this man, as the British have always regarded us anyway, this man was a cousin, so to speak, and someone they knew, and someone they could feel with when he felt strongly as he did about some of the political issues in our country.